cold silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us, and a rip so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence, and it can't go on.
Hi, folks. I am Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on February the 3rd, 2010. For newcomers to the show, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com website, scroll down the front page, bookmark all the other sites I have listed there for future use. You'll need them once in a while when the big sites go down. And remember, these are the official sites, cuttingthroughthematrix.com. There's cuttingthroughthematrix.net. .us.ca, Alan Watt, cuttingthroughthematrix.ca, there's cuttingthrough.jenkness.com, and there's Alan Watt sentinel.eu. The last one is a European site, has all the audios for download, it's the same as the rest of them, but it has the addition of transcripts of a lot of the talks I've given over the years, and you can choose from the various languages of Europe. So you print them up and pass them to your friends. I always say this is a tin can moment. I should have to get a tin can and put a couple of cents in it and rattle it here. To remind you that you're the audience who bring me to you. I don't get paid by anybody else to promote anything. That's how most shows get their cash. They bring on guests and so on who will really are there to sell you something at the end of the show. So it's up to you to keep me going. And in this way, too, remember, too, I'm unfettered in a sense. I can say a lot more about different topics that can be kind of iffy at times. So if you can keep me going, that's great. So you can get, you can find how to do so by going into cuttingthroughthematrix.com, buying the books and so on I have for sale, or donating to me. In the U.S. to Canada, personal checks are good. International postal money order is good from the post office if you don't have a bank account. Cash is good. Western Union, MoneyGram is an alternative as well, or PayPal. And remember, too, with the PayPal button on the website, you can also order, just send off the PayPal donation and then send a separate email to me. Same outside the Americas. Western Union, MoneyGram, cash, or PayPal. It's up to you how you want to do it. For those who get the disc burned and passed to them, and they don't play them on the computer, they use CD players at home, you can get in touch with me by writing to Alan Watt, Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. The postal code is P, as in Peter, the number 3, E as in Elizabeth, the number 4, N as in Nora, the number 1, P3E4N1. And synchronicities is something that's interested me my whole life. When I used to wonder if things just popped up across the world, the same topics at the same time, by chance, or does the media get bored with the same old stories and they all get together and put things out there? Now, sometimes that will happen, and sometimes it isn't just boredom. Sometimes it's collusion when big agendas are being pushed, like global warming and what's supposed to be done about it. That kind of thing happens. But once in a while, you find out that that synchronicities certainly do occur, even in your own personal life. Things will pop up. If you're thinking about a particular subject, you might just get an email that day that mentions that particular topic. It might be the first time in a whole year you've heard anybody else mention it, that kind of stuff. But you'll find these things in media, these kind of trends, you call them. And I was thinking of the medical system. And the medical system brought me on to other things. We'll be back with more after this break on this topic.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hey,
Hi, folks. I am Alan Watts, and we're cutting through the matrix. Just talking about a synchronicity that popped up once in a while. So, before I get on to the topics, it reminds me of it was a very elderly guy in Mexico, one of the oldest people supposedly to be known in existence, who killed himself a few years back. He committed suicide, and he did leave a note, and it was in the papers at the time, and he said basically he was just bored. He was bored at watching life go round and round with the same things happening all the time, and with politicians and how they pander to the public to get in, do all these odd things which they never talked about when they were running for elections, and how they always talked about how the great that they were at serving the public, and it's all lies, basically. And all he had to look forward to was more of the same old nonsense, basically. That was it. There was nothing much changed in this guy's life. And the lies were the same, and the routines were the same. But that's what we get in organized systems that we live in. We call them civilization. We get organizations where people join them, whether it's the military, the police, or even governments, or a political party. These are all institutions where you lose technically your identity. You belong to the party. You give up the self when you go in. And then you're indoctrinated into to that particular system, and you will stand up to defend that system against all odds. Doesn't matter, as I say, if it's police, military, or politics. That's that's basically the nature of organizations. And there's been so much going on about healthcare. This is the synchronicity. It pops up in Canada at the same time as they're talking about bringing in a system in the U.S. for the people. And it all sounds wonderful. I mean, it all sounds wonderful, what they promised to give you, but you never get that. You never get what's promised, because when politics runs a system, it comes down to economics. And remember, political parties have agendas. You can't couple population reduction as part of an agenda with helping the people to be well and fit. It doesn't equate. There's something missing here. It doesn't work out quite right. And on the other hand, I quite understand the greed, the massive, incredible greed within medical systems, even the ones that work for the Canadian government and the pharma companies. The incredible greed is, they know, you see, that people they'll sell their homes, they'll mortgage their grandparents' homes. Everybody will chip in to save little Tommy that's dying or this or that, and they'll try and save him. People do the same thing with their pets. And in cities, one of the most lucrative businesses to be in today is small veterinary practice. That's for small animals. And major cities, where people will literally spend everything they have to save the dog or the cat, and that's quite natural too. So wherever there's this bonding here and a form of blackmail, that's going to be used by unscrupulous people. And professions really are these kind of professions are unscrupulous. When greed becomes the prime motive, then all humanity goes out the window and all decency goes out the window, and the wealthiest survive. But while they're talking about bringing in a system in the U.S., and now I've seen the study done by the RAND Corporation on behalf of the U.S. government. The RAND was asked to do an investigation into ways of cutting costs to bring in a system. And what the RAND did basically was look at the British system that's been through years of this, setting the system up, having it run efficiently, and then start cutting the branches from it as it went along until it's running on bare bones at times. So they basically said, here's what we can do to cut out all the extra costs. Now, people in the U.S. right now are not refused treatment. That's a misconception by a lot of people in other countries. The taxpayer will pick up the tab, but they will get treatments that they could never get, basically, if they were in a Medicare system like Canada. You get the bare bones minimum. There's a policy in Canada and Britain, for instance, to just keep prescribing pills to patients for the rest of their lives, even though it might be shortening their lives, if need be, because it cuts costs. The patient's paying the pills, and a surgical operation that might solve the problem altogether costs money. See, that's how they get around this kind of stuff. It's all cutting costs. And you wouldn't be in the hospital getting good treatment once that system comes in, you're at the bottom of the totem pole amongst the rest of the general population. You don't get that kind of treatment. I've experienced this in Canada myself. Where I'm in Canada, you cannot get a doctor up here at all. Now, it's called the city just north of me here, but you can't get on a waiting list for a doctor. You can be on it for 10 to 15 years and still not get on it. You have walk-in clinics where you get this four-inch high number. You sit like a cow, basically, till they call your number. You might take 4 hours or something, 5 hours, sometimes 6 hours to see a doctor. And even then, they don't want you to sit down. I'm not kidding. Because they're standing with a prescription in their hand when you walk in the door, and they want to just give you something to get you out the door again as fast as can be. The flying doctors, that's what they're called. Because they have so many patients coming in, and the government's cut back so heavily, they can't even get doctors to stay up in that city. That's the great health system. And because of that, people who can afford it, the few who can afford it, go to the States right now to get operations done. Or they could be waiting here for years, and they'll die on the waiting list. That's the reality, folks. That's reality. Here's an article here about Canadian politicians who don't wait in a queue by thepatientfactor.com. It says, Canadian politicians without a queue. When you think about our universal health care system, do you ever wonder about the fairness of waiting lists, otherwise known as queues? Our politicians claim queues provide Canadians with equal access, very equal up here, you see, to health care. Do they really? Remember the recent outcry when hockey players and their families jumped the queue for the H1N1 flu vaccine? I don't understand why that caused such a stir, because athletes, like politicians, always receive preferential treatment. Do you honestly think that any of them wait months on a list for an MRI or surgery? Do you really? Do you really believe that? They wait months like you do? How can you be considered a queue jumper if you have never really in the queue to begin with? In 2007, the former Prime Minister of Canada, John Chrétien, discussed his medical symptoms while playing a round of golf with a cardiologist. He received testing the next day that revealed arterial blockage. Media reported that a cardiologist then requested emergency quadruple heart bypass surgery for the following day. The swift access to testing and surgery helped prevent heart damage from occurring. The Montreal Heart Institute denies that Chrétien received any special treatment, indicating that all of their patients receive the same standard of care. Oh, really? How many other patients are able to schedule their own emergency surgery? On December 11, 2007, Chrétien appeared on the CBC television show The Hour with George Strombolopoulos. And it says, in the first 2 minutes of the interview, we learn that after receiving the results of his tests, Chrétien was told that he would need surgery at some point in the future. His response was that he'd like to have it right away, and they agreed to perform it the next morning. But that's why he didn't have to wait on a list like everybody else. He attributes it to luck. Yeah, but he was a good liar. I mean, he lied all the time, old Gene. The truth is that luck has very little to do with it. Well, in a campaign in 2006, the media reported that New Democratic Party, these are the parts of the parties, but further left than Marx, it's called the National Democratic Party in Canada, the leader, Jack Layton, received a hernia operation in the 1990s at the Shoulders Hospital, a private facility in Toronto, for the very, very expensive. An interesting choice for such a fierce defender of the public health care system. Then again, if labor unions help found your political party, then I suppose you're beholden to them politically and not personally. The truth is that universal health care and its cues do not provide each of us with equal access when it comes to caring for our health. In a 2005 judgment, the Supreme Court of Canada confirmed that access to a waiting list is not access to care. Oh, yeah, you can have access to a waiting list, but not to care, you understand? The shameful part is that politicians continue to shape our health policy and promote a public health care system whose shortcomings they will never experience. And that's the fact. You see, they don't experience it themselves. And this came to light because we've got this article here, too, from the Globe and Mail. The heart and soul of Newfoundland politics. Newfoundland's a big province in Canada. This is about basically the premier, or it's like a governor in the States, for this huge province. And it says, the heart and soul of Newfoundland politics is in for repair. And it's not in his home province, or even in Canada for that matter. Newfoundland Premier Danny Williams is scheduled for heart surgery in the United States, a move that throws into question his province's and his nation's healthcare system. A source confirmed to the Globe and Mail late yesterday that Mr. Williams has left St. John's for an undisclosed destination in the U.S. to have heart surgery later in the week. The 59-year-old Conservative left yesterday morning, spokesperson Elizabeth Matthews said, without disclosing his location. While some of his critics were tight-lipped last night, the online public questioned his exodus, why the care he needed was not available in Canada, or whether he preferred treatment in the U.S. To understand, this is the reality of universal health care. Back with more after these messages.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watts, and we're cutting through the matrix, talking about the healthcare systems and how they always claim that it's all equal and fair and so on and just, and the reality is always very, very, very different because politics has different agendas and they are always cutting costs in different areas for wars and things like that, or to bail out banks and their friends. But there's nothing left for the people, except on paper perhaps. But anyway, here's the premier, that's like the governor of a big province in Canada, another one actually, he's not the first, to go down to the States for medical treatments, you see. This is a 59-year-old Conservative left yesterday morning, spokesman Matthew said, without disclosing his case. Some of his critics were tight-lipped last night, the online public questioned his exodus, why the care that he needed was not available in Canada, or whether he preferred treatment in the U.S. The severity of Mr. Williams' condition is not publicly known. However, he was reportedly not overly concerned about his health. As he told close friends, his greatest regret was the possibility of missing his Tuesday night hockey outings. Well, I guess it's very severe to have hockey on his mind. The remaining details are expected to be revealed at a news conference today by Deputy Premier Kathy Dunderdale. At risk is the already tarnished image of the province's healthcare system, which has suffered in recent years. It's been across the board in the whole of Canada. And then, too, we find in this other newspaper the same kind of thing. And I put these links up on my site, remember, at the end of the night. So it's February the 2nd, this article here. And it says, NL Premier's U.S. heart surgery sparks healthcare debates. Newfoundland and Labrador Premier Danny Williams speaks, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, supporters and critics of Canada's healthcare system have found themselves in a new debate sparked by the decision of a provincial premier to seek heart surgery in the U.S. The Newfoundland government said Tuesday that Danny Williams would be absent for a few weeks after his doctors recommended he travel to the U.S. for a heart procedure. It says here, think about the absurdity about Canadians spending their income on medical treatment outside the country because it's not provided here at home, said Brett Skinner, president of the Fraser Institute, the Vancouver-based free market think tank. And then it goes on and on and on. But the point of all of this is to say, once you're into a system, when you swear into a system, police, military especially, and governmental parties, you close ranks. Your first job really is to protect the system, the organization you belong to. And you never tell the public the truth, even though the evidence is self-evident wherever you look. As I say, where I am, you just can't get a GP. Can't do it. And what you get is walk-in clinics where there's maybe 100, 200 folk going through in a day, and one doctor there who dash between 4 and 5 rooms. They don't want you to sit down because they don't want you to stay. They don't have your records there either, so they don't know who you are. You see a different one each time. All they want you to do is to give you something to keep you happy and get you out the door, literally. That's what you get under this healthcare. And a lot of folk, I'm telling you, a lot of folk must simply die in ignorance, never knowing that they've been neglected and that they were not given the best care or treatment. And the waiting lists are incredible. Often people do die before they can get operations and so on done. It's disgusting. Now, what they'll do when they give you a healthcare system is make sure that the special big cities have at least a better healthcare system, because that's under Agenda 21 as well. They want all the main super cities to have at least something to deal with emergencies, especially car emergencies. That's a show, by the way, where 10 of them will be on staff, and they rush and do all the stuff that you see on TV, because people think of injuries, hospitals, and what might happen to themselves. But for ordinary, straight-through operations, you just can't get them. Waiting lists last for years sometimes. That's the reality of it. And that's what's coming to the States. And yet, here's the politicians from Canada, not just recently, but just this one, that has been happening over the years, going to the States for the better treatments and getting it very quickly. Treatment. So there you are. Can you really have governments and politics running healthcare systems? Can you really? Because their whole job is cutbacks, cutbacks, and cutbacks. The cutbacks in Britain are incredible. I mean, literally through this reporting, this report's coming out there where it's so bad now that you have ambulance guys and paramedics coming out there and putting patients on the stretchers with his fecus from a previous patient and blood on them as well. Cutbacks, cutbacks, cutbacks. This article here is from the BBC, 20th of January 2010. London healthcare heads towards a crisis, say doctors. Now, as I said, they make sure that the better standard, not the best, but the better standard they're going to give you is in the big cities, but even now they're slashing them. Who are they going to pay, the bankers or the hospitals? The war guys or the hospitals? Says London hospitals could close as healthcare in the capital heads towards a major financial crisis, the British Medical Association has said. As much as £5 billion could be cut from National Health Service London's budget by 2070, it claimed. Its report, London's National Health Service on the Brink, as it was called, London's NHS on the Brink, predicts that from 2011 there will be a freeze on National Health Service budgets, with the worst cuts falling in London. And I'll be back with more on this article after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix, talking about so-called universal healthcare systems versus the private. As I say, I don't have much regard for medicine at all, to be honest with you, because I think it's such a greedy industry, because pharma really runs it all now. And the price that they charge people who are going to die or whatever for pills that might extend their lives a little bit, it's phenomenal. So, you know, some certain pills cost maybe $1,000, $2,000 each. No kidding. That are not given, certainly, on National Health Service systems because of the expense. But, I mean, the greed in pharma is so incredible. There's nothing wrong with, basically, the healthcare system. People, per se, it's when government gets involved in it that it goes down the tubes. And they can only run according to the budget they're given. governments will always slash back in budgets. In Britain, the hospitals were told to increase the number of bed space because at the time, I think it was Blair said it should be so, just to keep the people happy. And they took all the trolleys off, or the wheels off the trolleys in the corridors and called them beds. Now, they were stationary, right? They were not movable. They were beds. And that's how they got around that. Little wrangles to keep the bureaucrats happy, to keep the parliaments happy. You can't do that with when you're dealing with people and lives and all the rest of it. You can, as I say, you can certainly get fast treatment for and no waiting list, really, for tubal ligations, vasectomies, things for depopulation, abortions. But when it comes to regular, because again, you've got politics involved then in the medical system, you can't have the two combined. And you always get it with national government-run healthcare systems. And I'm talking about London here now with the cutbacks. This is just one city. It says to give people, to get a National Health Service spokesman said, and this is the one who lies to the public, to give people leading expert care, we also need to centralize some systems. So here's the remedy for the cutbacks. The BMA's report written by health expert Dr. John Lister criticizes some of the proposals the National Health Service London has made public, including cutting the number of people going to the hospital A&E departments, that target of 60%. So I guess we just turn them away. This is how they're going to solve the problem, right? And the number going to hospital outpatients by 55%. That's a great way of solving the problem. Diverting millions of patients to unproven poly systems or clinics that have not yet been built. Cutting up to £1.1 billion from London hospital budgets, forcing wide-scale cutbacks and closures. A 66% reduction in staffing of non-acute services, including community services for older people and district nurses. A 33% cut in the length of general practitioner appointment times. The report surveyed board papers and other published materials from primary care trusts in London. National Health Service spokesman Anne Raisbury says, defends proposed changes. So she's a spokesperson. As I say, when you join a party, an organization that's very uniform, you submerge your identity in it and you become a liar. That's just the way of organizations and humans. So she defends the proposed changes, which is basically slashing everything by over half. The National Health Service London spokesman said, to give Londoners a better standard of National Health Service care, we need to provide more of the services people use the most, closer to where people live. That's Agenda 21. Get them all out, get them crammed in the centre of the big cities, and that's decentralisation. That's exactly what it would do with Agenda 21. And so to give people leading expert care, we also need to centralise on service to create, for example, dedicated stroke and trauma units, he added. This will save hundreds of lives every year. So, in other words, what they're telling you here, by having everything, less is better, right? And choco rations are up, as George Orwell would have said in 1984. That's what happens when governments run the system. Now, the governments have no problem putting trillions pounds into all these banks across the planet that just ripped off the general public. No problem. It's done so swiftly too, isn't it? So swiftly. But you watch the systems for healthcare crumbling for years and slashing them and that's it, folks. That tells you who is important in this system. And believe you me, the bankers won't have to wait in any queue for treatment either. Pretty disgusting, eh? It's pretty disgusting. Now, here's an article here. It's an oddball one. Someone sent me. It's the United States Attorney's Office from Massachusetts, District of Massachusetts. And it's a point to this particular article, January the 14th, 2010. It says that Springfield, anesthesiologist charged with falsifying medical research, the former chief of acute pain treatment at Bay State Hospital in Springfield, Massachusetts. Now, this is part of a chain of hospitals you get in the private sectors, too, chains of them. It was charged today in federal court with falsifying medical research studies, including studies that were published in medical journals regarding pain management. United States Attorney Carmen M. Ortiz, Mark Dragonetti, special agent and so on, because there are always different people that took part in the investigation. Information alleges that Rubin solicited and obtained research grants from pharmaceutical companies to perform research studies on pain management. Big business. Big business for people with various cancers. Massive, you know. Yet pharma's competing to get the businesses and the chains. I even give them little freebies for a few weeks, stuff like that. This is often associated with various surgical procedures, but that he did not actually perform this research studies himself, the guy that solicited and obtained research grants. He didn't do the studies himself. Instead, he made up patient data. He created it out of thin air, made up the patient data, submitted it to medical journals, and caused false articles to appear in a number of medical journals. If convicted on this charge, Rubin faces up to 10 years imprisonment, followed by 3 years of supervised release and a $250,000 fine. The case was investigated by the Food and Drug Administration, Office of Criminal Investigations, Health and Human Services, Office of the Inspector General, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. As I say, where he was working was the Bay State Hospital that deals with really chronic care and chronic pain, and it's part of a chain. So the guy was really taking the kickbacks and so on from pharma and putting out very good write-ups to medical journals on behalf of the particular medications that these pharmas that approached him were selling. That's how corrupt the system is. Everything is corrupt. There are lots and lots more on these particular kind of cases in the U.S. and elsewhere, where, as I say, they'll often give freebies. For instance, they'll go to the National Health Service, and they might give you 10 weeks of a free management pill for so many hundred patients if you will take them on for a five-year plan. Stuff like that. They're really high marketing, very, very high-powered marketing strategies. They sell their drugs, the very expensive drugs. Maybe not the best drugs, but they'll get the best deal to the health services for the cost, especially when the government's running it, but never the best that is available. That's the reality of it too. And it does make you wonder, as I say, it really does make you wonder about the system in which we live, doesn't it? Then how did this, again, is synchronicity, healthcare, aging, all the rest of it. It's all over the place right now. And this is called Inconvenient Truth on Aging. It's from the Australian newspaper, February the 4th, 2010. It says, Wayne Swan clearly missed a great opportunity earlier this week with the release of the third intergenerational report. He referred to the report by the bureaucratic abbreviation 31GR4. But if the Treasurer really wanted to appear with it, he should have christened it the iGen 3 report. The intergenerational report is, of course, the government's key reference document canvassing policy options for managing the ageing of Australia's population. Every country is at this right now, by the way. The problem being that from 2011 onwards, this is the projection for the rest of the world too, more baby boomers exit the world than Generation Ys enter the workforce. It's to do with money, by the way, not how sick you are. The issue is not just the number of baby boomers looking for aged pensions, it's the loss of this cohort's contribution to the tax base. In other words, as they retire, they're not producing. Remember the definition at the United Nations of a good global citizen is a good producer and consumer. When you retire, you're a consumer. You're not a good citizen anymore. They would rather have you go through an exit home. So it says the favoured solution so far to managing this matter has been to grow the worker base. In this regard, Kevin Rudd was emphatic on the ABC's 7:30 report last October when he stated he believed in a bigger Australia and further that he made no apology for that view, meaning bringing more people into it. The Prime Minister's comments have sparked furious debate about the sustainability and advisability of future growth. Then it goes down about all the other options that is available. Now, what can they do? Can they have two alternatives, strong population growth or productivity gains? The astute political preference will be for the productivity option. Strong population growth demands costly investment in hard and often property infrastructure. It also ignites impassioned concern for environmental lobbyists who don't want so many folk on the planet. Not that we should be listening to them in the first place, they're a bunch of nutters. On the other hand, who is going to argue with a policy of better education and improved access to technology? But this raises the question of what is the range of policy options to deal with the aging of the population. And then they go through what the governments consider how to manage aging population, and again, it's all to do with finances. Raise the retirement age. It was already lifted from 65 to 67 years of age. However, by the time many baby boomers actually get to 67, I suspect retirement age will have been pushed out to 70. In fact, with any luck, most boomers will drop dead just short of the line. In other words, you pay all this money into all your life, and you'll die before you can get a penny back. That's what government, honestly, really wants. Because they've got other things to do with that cash than dish it out to you every month. That's the reality of the world we live in, for the very naive out there. Now, there's some callers on the line, so I'll take John from Connecticut, if he's still there. Are you there, John?
Yes, Alan. Good evening. I'm going to be a little bit off topic regarding what you're talking about. Although I have to just say, when you mentioned about knocking us all off before we get to retirement, the chemtrail spraying is probably one of their most favorite tactic in that department.
It does, because the elderly and the young too, by the way, are getting bronchial infections that they cannot get rid of. They keep persisting, coming back. Yeah.
Well, that's right. Now, tonight a lady sent me a thing from ABC News Channel 7. It's actually 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 9 seconds long. I could play it, but what it's about is the computer brain interfacing technology. Mm-hmm. So basically they're using it now they put the headset on somebody, like it's kids games, and using your mind only, you're able to alter the stuff that's on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had heard somebody speak about this before. I'm just wondering what you know about it. I mean, I know they will eventually put, it supposedly they'll use not just headsets externally, but implanted chips, and the military may already be very advanced in this. And I was just wondering if you could speak on that, and I'll listen off online.
Okay. You're absolutely right. DARPA published an article. It's in my archive section, in fact, from the last year, I think it was, where DARPA claimed that they'd implanted a brain chip in a quadriplegic. Now, DARPA, for the military, has got nothing to do with civilians and helping paraplegics. But apparently, this young man could then email by thoughts, email his friends by a computer hookup. But this is nothing new. Sweden was leading the world in this experimentation since the 1970s, using prisoners in prison with direct hookups to computer. In Canada, you had Mr. Persinger, who's a professor of Laurentian University in neuroscience, I should say. Now, he's an interesting history, this man, because he worked, he had contracts with the Pentagon and the CIA in the 70s, working on various weaponry to do with immobilizing people by firing different pulse waves into the brain of crowds and so on. They could immobilize them. But he also worked with a Corbin helmet. Now, the Corbin helmet's been here for maybe 25, maybe even 30 years, and he put this on his students and with using electromagnetic pulse and radiation, electrical radiation, they could stimulate any parts of the brain to experience whatever you would normally experience when that part would light up. They can cause it to light up, and you will have the experience. It's a reverse order, but it works the same way. And Persinger and others worked in high-level teams with other professors on these very projects. The end result definitely is to implant chips into the brain, again, for their peaceful, obedient-type society of pretty well the very near future. They have the brain so well mapped out, it's rather staggering what they know about it. And you have to go into the fields of neurolinguistics, neuroscience, psycholinguistics, because language is very important. Psycholinguistics is very important in how we understand, and it also deals with the parts of the brain that come into interface with each other. But remember, each time you have a thought, clusters of brain cells are activated in unison, and they give off electromagnetic fields, which can be picked up remotely. And if you do it in reverse order, you will actually make a person think of something, even visually, that kind of thing. It's more than one language, not just written or vocal. It is also the visual. So it's a fantastic field, but they're so far ahead of it. And the chip, actually, I'm pretty certain, is ready. If they can implant one to a quadriplegic, it can make him communicate to people. They can pretty well do anything. Now, remember, too, this will be interfaced with regional or local computers. You will not design the programs for the computer. Someone else will, which means that technically someone else is now in charge of your brain. I hope everyone understands that and never forgets it. What a power tool, what a power trip that will be if this is ever put across the world on any large scale at all. Because if people think that the big boys are going to do this for you and give you great experiences and leave it at that, you really don't understand your history, or you don't understand power and humanity at all. You get an awful shock. I've actually had young people say to me, "Well, the brain chip won't be bad. We can go into the Matrix system and fight it from within." Well, the whole point of the Matrix movie is you did not create the program. Everything you do is anticipated. Back with more after this break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watts, and we're cutting through the Matrix. And we'll go to Kevin in Ontario. Are you there, Kevin?
Oh, I'm not all there, but I'm still here.
That's good enough.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to call in. You know, I'm sure it's been in the news all day. I'm sure every Truth Radio show has talked about it, and that was, you know, the passing of the great Eustace Mullins.
I'm sure,
you know, it's sad to see him go, and, you know, ones like him are surely going to be missed, but at least we can take comfort in knowing that truth seekers like you and others are still out there, you know, at least trying to fight the good fight and trying to get people to wake up to what's going on here.
Yes, plus he left a lot of books behind him as well, which will be around for a long time.
Absolutely, and I'm sure since you live only about an hour and 15 minutes away from where I'm at, I'm sure about a week and a half ago you saw all those planes spraying the skies like crazy over here. They were checkerboarding the skies here.
Yes, oh, I know. Yeah.
Oh.
Sometimes it's so bad that some of the stuff comes down, it's very cold in clumps and lands on the trees. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it, and I've pointed out to some people. Some people saw it for what it was and then just become apathetic and said, what do you want me to do about it? And others still believe that it was just contrails. It's like, are you... It's pathetic. Well, a lot of people know what's going on, but again, you know, the problem I've always been facing around here, especially in North Bay, is apathy. You know, a lot of people know the New World Order. They know the push for world government in the hand of the Masons, in the hand of the global elite, or their Zionists, or whatever.
Yeah.
But you say, well, what do you want me to do about it? I said, well...
Well, that's their easiest way out. And again, that's a very interesting out that they give themselves. It's very, very common. And you have to go into psychology. It is well explained as how people give themselves that option and the outs so they don't have to be responsible for doing anything. It's phenomenal, even though it's all around them. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think like one of the best solutions to fight this New World Order system, I think Max Egan's idea for noncompliance on a mass scale, if it's possible to be done, is probably one of the best ways to do it. And also... if you can get involved with local groups that are trying to not only to protest and to bring awareness to these political atrocities, but also to have a group that will be able to fend for themselves and grow their own food and whatnot, you know, to have a small community of truthers, you know, like the We Are Change groups that are popping up everywhere, and like we have one here in North Bay. You are invited to join us any time you like, there, Alan.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah,
and
that's true, and that's just what people need. They got to really. Start to have non-compliance because it's a passive way to do it. It's not aggressive. If you get aggressive, they love that because they turn the force on you. I mean, pure force. And then you look bad, the way that the media will spin it with selected photographs and shots. So
yeah, and I tell that to people. You know, violence is not the answer to this whole new world order situation. I heard people saying we got to march on let's march on Washington with guns blazing. I said, you idiots! If you guys do that, that plays right into their handbook.
Well, they've actually expected that, and they've been preparing for that very scenario for 30 years with
absolutely
multi SWAT teams interloping, multi jurisdictional task force in Canada. They're all interwoven, all the different services, and they're prepared for any situation because 30 years ago they knew that today, with all these problems, was coming because it was scheduled.
Ordo ad caelo, eh?
That's right. Yeah. But thanks for calling, though. That's the music coming in for the end of the show. But for Hamish, myself, Ontario, Canada, it's good night to me, your God, or your God's go with you.